they gone. It was like $1,200. I was like, oh, yeah, I struck gold. Oh, my God. I'm taking this right to the pawn shop, and I'm getting my light bill paid for the rest of the year. You cannot do that. That's bad luck, Tiffany. What are you talking about? You've got to use it for at least 6 months before you give it away or sell it. That is how you have to deal with a gift. Oh, that's what rich people do? Yes, Tiffany, it's what we do. Seriously, Jada? I can't be keeping this. This is too much. It's fine. It's a gift from me. And I didn't pay for it. The designer gave it to me. Oh, you got it free? Is that how you so rich? You get all this expensive shit for free? She started laughing at me. But seriously, I can't have this. My philosophy is that if I can't keep the amount of money in there that it costs, I shouldn't have it. However much a bag costs, if the bag is a $300 bag, I should be able to keep $300 in it at all times. Or it's too expensive. Jada was laughing at me again. Well, Tiffany, why don't you just put $1,200 in there? I can't keep that much cash on me. This fake dog ain't gonna stop robbers. Well, it's a gift. And it's the type of nice designer bag you should have. You need to find a way to use it. I thought about it and came up with a great idea. Okay, I'll get a money order for $1,200 in there that's made out to myself. That way, I can always have $1,200 in my bag for myself and can't nobody steal it. More laughing from Jada. I don't know if she thinks my actual comedy is this funny. She gave me 3 more Givenchy's and a wallet. I was calling it Givenchy for like 2 weeks because I can barely read, but it's Givenchy. She left the price tag on everything. Why are you leaving the prices on it if you got it free? So you know the value of what you're carrying around. You got to carry yourself like you're valuable, and you need to have valuable things. When this movie comes out, you're going to be an A-list actress. You got to think like an A-list person. This is what I was talking about in the text I sent you. What do you mean? I like my $85 dress. Tiffany, you want to wear designer clothes because people are going to be seeing you. You're going to be in the eye of the public, and they're going to be like, what are you wearing? If you say Chico or Ann Taylor, that's not going to work. You need to be wearing designers. It sets you apart from everybody else and puts you in a certain class level. If you want to be considered top-notch, you need to wear top-notch type things. But Jada, this stuff costs money. I appreciate your gift, I really do, but I can't buy this myself. I have to be smart with my money and save it. I gotta stack my chips, not spend them. You absolutely should be smart with your money. If it makes you feel safe to stack your chips, stack them. Most people in Hollywood don't do that. That's smart. I want to spend my money on things that I think will make me more money. That's why I'm investing in my book and my comedy special. That's why I buy nice hair. It's going to make me more money if I look better like that. That's great, Tiffany. You do that. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, but what I still don't get is, what does a $1,200 bag have to do with that? If I buy shit like that, I'll be broke. I need my knockoffs. That keeps me from living in my car again. Tiffany, your only 2 options are not either 1, spend all your money to try and fit in, or 2, be cheap and look low class. There are other options, girl. Like what? I'm not about to steal that stuff. I couldn't think of any other options from what she said besides stealing. I'll introduce you to some people. But really, all it boils down to is using your fame to get the stuff. Designers want famous, pretty women wearing their clothes. You put yourself on Instagram wearing a $500 dress, most places will give it to you for free or very cheap. Free is an option because I understand free, and I like that shit a lot. Free does make sense. I have thought about this a lot, and the more experience I get in Hollywood, the more I think Jada is right. I definitely have a very rough mentality, a broke person's mentality. I have a little bit of money now, but I just stack it away like a chipmunk. I don't know how much to spend or where or on what. It's cool to save. but I need to use my money in smart ways to help myself and my career. Now that I've earned my way to a new level in life, I have to do new things. I can't be living the poor life anymore. I can't be thinking that way. Poor mindset can work when you're poor, but it doesn't work well when you have a little money. I emphasize a little. I'm far from rich. I know this, but honestly, part of me still feels like I could end up homeless again at any point in time. And then all I'm going to have is a bag with a dog on it. And I don't want that. I'd rather have the money. I want my money to make me money. But what Jada is teaching me is that how you look in Hollywood can often make you money. Opportunities in Hollywood will open up if you are sending the right signals about yourself. Fashion is part of how to send the right messages. If I want to be that girl that belongs in Hollywood, I not only have to have talent, but I have to signal to Hollywood that I belong. By wearing cheap, low-class, knockoff stuff, I'm telling people that they can treat me low-class, that maybe I don't belong on that higher level. I have to value myself properly. That's something I have had a hard time with in the past, but I'm getting better. Jada said to me one day, "Tiffany, I'm also going to need you to be wearing makeup when you're out or on stage. And can you at least glue on some lashes and put on some lips daily?" I don't feel like it. If it's an audition, yeah. If it's an interview or something, yeah. Otherwise, I feel like I should be able to walk around here naked-faced. Jada gave me that look like, girl, please. Tiffany, that should be how it works. And it would be great if it was true, but it's not how Hollywood works. You need to start wearing makeup. You're a pretty girl. You need to let yourself look that way. Okay. Well, when we get closer to the premiere of the movie, I'll start wearing makeup. I promise. And it'll be good makeup, too. Not the stuff I buy from the pharmacy. She laughed at that, too. Daddy. My father just died on May 13th, 2017. I'm looking at him right now. His cremated remains, as I'm writing this book. He's in a priority mailbox, sitting on my dresser. He didn't want me at the hospital or anything. When he visited me in L.A., he went to the hospital. He told the doctors not to tell me anything that's going on with him. I know that he had congestive heart failure, but he wouldn't tell me anything else. Dad, well, if you don't let them tell me, what do you want me to do? What if you die? I want you to cremate my body and take me back to Africa and put me next to my mother. He told the hospital not to call me or contact me until he was dead. They called me just before he died because they felt like that was wrong. I flew up there, paid for the mortuary and everything. I called one of his cousins to tell him. He started telling me about all the property I got in Africa. And that I'm actually a princess in his old village. That my dad was like a king in the village, but he ran away because of the war. Then he was saying, there's back taxes I need to pay and all this stuff. And if I come, I have to come with some type of security because it's still a war going on in the village where my grandmother's grave is. And I have to claim this land for the family before the government finds out my father is dead because they'll confiscate it from the family. And then we won't have nothing. And that's what they living off of. I didn't know about any of this. This feels like it's a movie. Hopefully not a tragedy. I just know that I married a man who promised to find my daddy. I got 10 years with my dad. I learned a lot, but I also feel like he punked out on me. Now he wants me to go to Africa. I don't know. I'm trying to find the funny in that. I still can't find nothing funny about it, but I'm trying. P.S. I found all of this out after I wrote this book. I found out that I got goats, cows, a coffee business, a spice business, what they call a hotel, and several houses. Now, I don't know if this is like the reverse of the Nigerian scheme, so like the Eritrean scheme, but whatever it is, I'm going over there and I'm about to go claim my stuff. Now, they telling me I got to get dual citizenship. Now, if I get dual citizenship, what does that mean? Part of me American, part of me African? Oh, wait. already got that title. She ready. And you know what else I was thinking about this? Because they said I'm a princess, right? But my grandmother's dead. My father's dead. My grandfather's dead. Both of my uncles are dead. And I'm the only one left surviving. So it sounds like to me, I'm the queen of Asmara. Back to the book. She ready now. The movie Girls Trip came out in July 2017, did $30 million in the opening weekend, and my life totally changed. This used to be my normal conversation with directors and producers. I would be like, hey, I would like to work with you one day, and the producer would be like, huh, yeah, you're a good comedian. I'd be like, you better get on the Tiffany Haddish train while you can, because it's about to take off. Choo-choo. Then they all just blow me off. Now, those same directors and producers are blowing up my phone. The day after the movie came out, I had 100 text messages. The next morning when I woke up, 400 text messages. That week, I probably got 1,500 different people texting me, wanting to get together or work together or pitch me on something. Now, mind you, 50 of the texts were from my ex-husband, trying to get me back. 3 of them were from Titus, trying to have lunch or sit down with me at some point. And 4 other ex-boyfriends sending all kinds of stuff. But still, most were from real Hollywood people. I gotta admit, that shit feels real good. Honestly, part of me doesn't want to work with those people. The people that I asked to give me a chance, the ones who said no, I kind of want to just ignore them. I mean, I'm not going to do that. It's not professional. But still, I kind of want to. The funniest part is that Rumpelstiltskin is all over me now. Remember that dude? The one who said, the only way you can go on tour with me is if you putting out. Rumpelstiltskin called me the week after the movie came out. He's like, hey, Tiffany, my mama said that you're amazing and that I'm a fool for not having you on my shows and stuff. I should have been working with you a long time ago. Well, your mama right. She's a smart woman. I told you that too. Yeah, so how would you feel about doing a tour with me, you, and some other comedians? How do you feel about that? I don't know. You headlining it? No. I'm going to host. You be the headliner. You the main attraction. You the big deal. I'm listening. I talk to your people, and they say you get $1,000 a minute. That's right. It used to be $1 a minute. Now it's $1,000 a minute. That's right. Rumpelstiltskin was like, ooh, that's a little steep. How about if we do 34 shows and half of them will be in theaters and the other half will be in arenas? How would you feel about making $18,500 a show? $18,500? Yeah. I don't know. That's half my normal fee. Yeah, but all you got to do is show up. I can't even say that I'm going to be able to show up at all. See, Kevin Hart just asked me to do a movie with him, so I'm going to do the movie, because that's an A-list movie. Well, maybe we can work around your movie schedule. Well, see, I already have my own shows booked, a bunch of them. I mean, you have to work around the dates I already have booked. You know how it is. I'm headlining my own shows. They're already sold out, most of them, so I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you. You can tell me yes. I think you really shouldn't even be talking to me. You need to be talking to my team. But I'm talking to you first because I want to make sure it's cool with you before I present it to your team. Well, you need to present it to my team. Then if they present it to me in a manner that it seems like it's financially feasible, then I will take that on. Okay, I will do that right away. Also, I need you to tell my people who's putting out on this tour. I'll need to know that. What? Who's putting out on this tour? Because I know it ain't me. Tiffany, that was a joke. Those were jokes. You know those were jokes. Yeah, maybe. Except you never did let me come on tour with you. If it was a joke, you would have booked me. If it was a joke. Don't be holding on to old shit. Let that shit go now. Just let that shit go. Let it go. That's the past. That's the past. We living in the now. Yeah. I don't know about that, Rumpelstiltskins. Sounds like somebody about to make a whole lot of money. And it ain't gonna be me. I don't know. Girl, you must be about to start your period. I'm gonna call you back. 2 days later, he called back. We put the offer into your people, Tiffany. Now, you just gotta tell them you wanna do it. Yeah, okay. But it sounds like to me somebody is trying to eat off my plate. I don't know if that $1,000 a minute is gonna get it anymore. I really don't know if that's gonna get it, you know? Well, shit. If you do 40 minutes, that's $40,000. I know, right? And if you sold out an arena and you selling tickets for $50 to $150 a ticket, shit, that's going to be more than that. That's going to be a lot of money. Well into the six figures. I mean, I'm going to need to make some money too. Who are you right now? I'm Tiffany motherfucking Haddish. Who I always been, Rumpelstiltskins. I like you. I really do. But you're not going to be taking advantage of me, Rumpelstiltskins. That's not going to happen. Aw, baby, you hilarious. You hilarious. Nah, but for real, go talk to my team, and I will discuss it with them, and they will get back to you later. I just hung up the phone right then. And, ooh, wee, that felt good. I was so close to saying to him, yeah, I'll do it if you open up that booty hole. You got to open up that booty hole for me, though. I didn't say that, though. I sure wanted to, but I didn't. Rumpelstiltskins may not be a great person, but he's not a bad person. He's all right. He doesn't deserve that sort of treatment, and it's unprofessional, and I'm not going to be like that. But seriously, that's the kind of stuff that's been going on. A lot of people that told me I couldn't make it or tried to take advantage of me, now they're trying to figure out a different way to take advantage or be on my team in some kind of way. But that's not going to happen. I'm a survivor. And all this struggle I went through, while it sucked at the time, is really helping me now. It helped me get to where I am, and it will help me continue to improve and do better. It didn't always feel like it at times, but I truly believe I'm blessed. We not done. Growing up, I just wanted to feel wanted. I often think about having kids. Since I'm single as fuck and getting older, I'm thinking I will adopt a kid. Maybe an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, something like that. I was in that spot. When you're like 10 and a foster kid, nobody wants you around because they think you're done. There's no way you're going to come out of that situation undamaged. I remember when I was in school, the social worker was like, her comprehension is not good. I comprehended very well. I knew what they was talking about. I was just quiet because I didn't want to get popped. Because there was popping at the school back then. In the hood in South Central? Oh, them teachers were slapping the shit out of your ass. Before high school, I didn't talk much. When I did talk, I was on a playground. I would want to play with the boys because if somebody picked on me while I was playing basketball, the other dudes would be like, man, leave her alone. She's with us. They would protect me. That's what I wanted. Someone to protect me. Something to be a part of. Eventually, I realized the only thing I could really be a part of was drama or being a mascot or working the bar mitzvahs. That's the only way I could feel included. What did they all have in common? Entertainment, performing, being something that other people wanted me to be. Those were the only things I'd be included in. Not to be Tiffany. To be outside of myself. Because myself wasn't necessarily... I felt like I wasn't good enough. Just because me wasn't good enough. Not for my parents. Not for school. Not for anything. I got into the entertainment business so I could feel accepted. And loved. And safe. When I go on stage to do comedy, it's about me. I feel accepted for who I am. I can go on stage with my hair fucked up, no makeup, ugly ass clothes I've been wearing for 3 days, and people still appreciate me. They still laugh. Being on stage is my safe place. It's the only place I've ever felt like nobody's going to jump up and beat me. And if somebody do beat me, there's so many people in here, they're going to stop it. And it's on stage where my voice is heard. I'm not being shut out. It's where I'm accepted. I just shot my special in a theater that seats 400 people. They had to turn lots of people away. Those people came to see me. Whether it was to see me succeed or to see me fail, they still came for me. It's a safe place. Like, I'm being loved and admired. I know it's not really that, but it's the closest I've ever really had so far. I didn't start out with the intention of writing about all this painful stuff. I just wanted to write a funny book. I don't normally like getting all deep into painful shit. I like to skip across the ocean of emotion. I feel like that's better. But once I started working on this book, I got into all this shit. If something comes up, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to tell you about it. And if it hurts, that's too bad. I'm going to be like, yo, this shit hurts, but let me tell you though. That's who I am. I feel like, honestly, that's the only reason I'm still alive. Because I'm willing to talk about my stuff. Whether it's on stage, or with friends, or in this book. I think that's why I came back to comedy. After being out of it for a while, in my teens and early 20s, so I had a place to talk about my painful stuff, to share it, and to do it in a way that worked, and helped out other people too. My friend told me that people who haven't lived anything even close to a life like mine, even they think they are the fucked up ones, and that everyone else is normal. My friend was like, Tiffany, everyone has some version of this in their life. Everyone has their own personal pain and their own demons, and no one will talk about it. And that's why they never get better. They're all afraid to talk about it. I guess I'm not afraid to talk about it. It just hurts a lot when I do. I believe in God, and I believe I have a purpose in life. I believe we all do. I believe you do too. I believe my purpose is to bring joy to people, to make them laugh, and to share my story to help them. To show people that no matter what, they matter. And they can succeed. No matter how bad things go, no matter how dark your life is, there is a reason for it. You can find beauty in it. And you can get better. I know because I've done it. That's why my comedy so often comes from my pain. In my life, and I hope in yours, I want us to grow roses out of the poop. Acknowledgements from Tiffany Haddish. I want to thank my grandma, my mama, my aunties, my daddy for donating the sperm that made me. All my brothers and sisters, my best friends, Selena, Shimona, Aiko, Shayna, and Rashia, my old agents, my current agents and managers, and Tucker Max. I want to thank the Department of Children's Services and the court system for taking care of me when no one else would. I also want to send a big super thank you to Jamie Masada, the owner of the Laugh Factory, and providing me with the venue and a place to perform. I also want to send another super thank you to Kalita Lewis, the social worker who got me into the comedy camp at the Laugh Factory. I want to thank everyone who ever said anything positive to me or taught me something. I heard it all, and it meant something. All the dudes I ever slept with, I appreciate the experience, but I ain't naming none of y'all. You didn't earn it. I want to thank God most of all, because without God, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I especially want to say thank you to my girl, Nicole, best producer ever, and to all the men who worked on this book and edited the hell out of my verbal mistakes. Thank you. Now I'm going to read Tucker's acknowledgments. Tucker Max. First, I have to thank Tiffany. I've turned down every other celeb who asked me to co-write their book. but I took on this book because I believed Tiffany would do something no one else would do. She promised me she would lay it all out there, and she did. This book is deep and so real in a way that very few other books are. She created something special. I'm proud of her and proud to have worked on it. The other group I have to thank is my team at Book in a Box. I co-founded a company that helps people write and publish their books. And though I am the name behind it, they do most of the work and deserve the props. Without them, this doesn't happen. If you like this book, the credit goes to Tiffany and to my team. Enjoy.
It all started in 1987. I was in school trying to be good like heaven. Kids was making fun of me cause I had this thing on my forehead. It was growing on my head like a horn. Thought it was a mole. It probably was a wart. They was making fun of me.
Those stupid bullies.
They was calling me a dirty ass unicorn. Said it looked like I had roaches on my face and shit. Like flies was all over me. I had long, beautiful black hair that my mother never combed. So I was a raggedy kid, and I hated my home. And then I decided one day, screw these kids, I'ma take every fucking thing that they say and make money off of. Decided, yeah, I'm the last black unicorn. I'm special and I'm powerful as fuck. If you're nice to me, I will let you touch me. But if you're mean to me, I will stab you with my horn. I'm the last black unicorn. I'm the last black unicorn. And look at me now, I grew up into a fine ass bitch. But I'm still a unicorn and they can suck my.
Check the gate.
The Last Black Unicorn was written and read by Tiffany Haddish. It was recorded by Jimmy Guthrie at Arcade 160 Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, John St. Denis at Magic Lantern Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, and Jason Ryan at Esplanade Studios in New Orleans, Louisiana, with editing and post-production by Like 2,000 Pounds. The associate producer was Jennifer Lopes. The Last Black Unicorn was produced and directed by Nicole Shelton. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Last Black Unicorn is available in hardcover from Gallery Books. The song The Last Black Unicorn was performed by Tiffany Haddish. Music by Avery Pearson. Lyrics by Tiffany Haddish.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.